Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I want more children! And tell them that we love them!
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest, and I've felt outraged.
We are the crowning glory of God's creation, and all of nature was made for us. Nature is more productive because of us, not less.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If you're going to be anywhere near Alpharetta, Georgia, you do not want to miss Sunday church at Alpharetta Bible Church. Todd. This is Wretched Radio.
What is that noise?
Do you... Excuse me, duh, I'm going to talk about the sermon, surviving close shaves. And that means I need to shave while I'm talking about close shaves, I mean, so that people will really get the impact of the sermon, because the Bible isn't sufficient and I need props and gimmicks and gizmos to get people's attention. Did I mention this is exactly what Pastor Michael Todd just did on Sunday morning? That's right. The Sunday sermon was about getting a haircut from God or something like that. And while on the stage in his hot pink uniform with props and gizmos and stage decorations, he was getting a haircut. See what he did there? Because you're going to get cut. So you better just let God cut. And I'm getting my hair cut. Well, I'm talking about God giving a cut. Now, you might be asking, what Bible verse did he use for his text? And the answer is, we have no idea, because believe me when I tell you, it was not out of laziness. We didn't go listen to the sermon. We just couldn't do it. Megachurch pastor, Oklahoma, thousands of folks, and this kid is an internet sensation. And his preening and his pausing and his costumes and his props and needing the decorations is just so grievous and such an assault on the Bible and its sufficiency. The most interesting book in the world is the Bible. And if you can't make that sound interesting to people who come to your church, you are simply not qualified. You are in the wrong business, and you need to go to Broadway or TV, whatever. Just get some other sort of job where you can use your theatrical skills. But the church is no home for theatrics because it undermines the sufficiency of the Bible. Jimmy, name a book that you really like. Anything, or even just pick a book from history and antiquity.
Oh, man, you're putting me on the spot.
Moby Dick it is.
Okay, outside the Bible. Yeah.
So, outside the Bible. See, you're just so stuck. Moby Dick it is. So, I'm going to tell you about Moby Dick. And in order to do that, I'm going to set up a tennis net. And I'm going to have a tennis racket with a ball machine so that I can explain to you how the whale chased after the captain and how he dodged a tennis ball. And you'd go, it's about a fish in the water. And it has nothing to do with tennis. But see, I need to illustrate it so that people can get it. You'd go, then you don't know what you're doing. If you can't simply explain the plot of the book, you are not a good teacher. Exactly. So let me share with you the text from the sermon as presented in Christian Post. I'm going to read this in a way that is pretty flat, because this type of communication requires all kinds of dramatization and inflection. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. And incidentally, that is the sign of a higher sermon. If it can be transcribed into print without a whole lot of manipulation, there's always going to be some. It's a different form of communication, a different style. So there will always be some editing required to take it from talk to text. But this requires so much editing for it to even read like it's at a second grade level. So here we go. I need to say this to you. like just come to God in all your fears and all your tears, and he bottles them and he's going to coddle them. And we make you feel like when you come to God, then somehow it get easy. I just want to let you know that our desire for comfort has made us despise his cut. This is second grade, maybe? You think if God tells you no, you're getting punished instead of if God tells you no, he's protecting you. You think if God doesn't allow you to get the position you prayed for, that somehow he hasn't heard your cry, but he actually is answering the prayers you didn't know how to form with your lips by not letting you get into a position that you would be locked into because he knows you're a people pleaser. And if you got that position, you wouldn't leave there for 15 years. Well, at least that was mostly coherent. You're about to hear prosperity light. And 3 years from now, he's going to open up the actual destiny step that you need. There it is. God's got this great plan for you. And if you don't figure out what it is and walk into that, you're going to be tripping through life clueless and stuck in a dead-end job for 15 years. What a bibbity-bobbity-boo shell game this presents to people. No wonder why they have to keep coming back to church. Are you going to drop a clue for me today so I can know what I'm supposed to be doing? Because God's got a destiny and I don't want to miss the boat. How cruel is this? But if you desire comfort at the expense of desiring the cut, hold on a second. Let me just try to recreate this for you because it needs help. If you desire comfort at the expense of desiring the cut, not from anybody, just regular, I'm talking about from God, you will miss out on what God has for you. Did any of that make sense? No. What are people going to remember? The pastor got a haircut on stage, and I guess I'm going to get cut by God or something like that. And who's the star of the show? He is. A prop is. A gimmick is. I'm just going to read one more section of this because he's wearing hot pink pants and a tight t-shirt or whatever it is, a collared shirt. I was on the beach, praise report. I felt more comfortable in swim clothes than I ever have in my life. Huh? What? Are we still in the church with the cut business? Yes, we are. Follow along, please. Now, some of you all won't shout with me, but you weren't with me when I was 275. I was ready to take my shirt off. I'm just serious. I was like, what are we wearing today, baby? I was getting my bathing suits ready and I wanted to color coordinate. I want you wearing pink today. Mimicking his wife's voice. I want you to wear pink today. I wear pink today. What I realized is my comfort on the beach came from the cutting in the gym. Oh! It's a beach haircut, pink bathing suit sermon illustration. I got my cutting in the gym. Your comfort comes from a place of cutting. You want comfort in your marriage? Go get that cutting at counseling. You want comfort in your finances? Cut the budget. God is shaping you into the image of what he sees for me because I can't see it for myself. So the dude gets to show off his new physique, but he's nowhere near the level of Perry Noble. That's right. He's back in business. You remember this fellow fell and he was a potty mouth pastor. And now he's back. He's in business again. And this Sunday, he bench pressed 400 pounds to illustrate God's power plus God's people so that you don't worry. Quote, this represents the weight that all of us carry in life, said Noble, who made a 135-pound barbell on stage. Every single day that we wake up, we carry weight. Whether it's spiritual, emotional, psychological weight, everybody in this room is carrying a certain amount of weight. See what he did there, Jimmy?
I love those props.
You know what? I'm surprised he didn't have weights on the stage to do a sermon on waiting on the Lord. Wouldn't actually surprise. What? It's the same word, right? No. Noble went on to explain that carrying the weight is not necessarily a bad thing because it makes you stronger, but life's pressures can become too difficult. And so He added enough weight to make it 400 pounds and pretended he was going to attempt lifting it before saying, "Ain't no bleeping way." In the sermon on the winning the war against worry, which incidentally we will be preaching on next Sunday when we are in our new church building in Alpharetta Bible Church. Unbelievable what God has allowed us to do. The main thing I want to teach today is God's power plus God's people equals winning the war against worry. Get ready for this. I wanted to talk to the person out there, you're watching online going, "I don't need the church. All I need is Jesus. It's just me and Jesus." Get ready for some blasphemy. Well, I'm glad you're that righteous. I'm not making this up. But not even Jesus was enough for Jesus. Because he needed the disciples to pray with them in the garden, so Jesus wasn't enough for Jesus. Blasphemous, frankly, on every level, removing the spotlight from King Jesus, who is sufficient in every regard, and shining it on unqualified men. This should grieve us. This is pathetic. And this is Wretched Radio.
Hey, so have you ever wondered how you can share a little hope with the world? What Time is Purple is more than just a question. It's a conversation starter, and it's yours to give absolutely free. You may remember and may have even helped us distribute a million copies of What Time is Purple just a couple of years back. Well, now we're on a mission to distribute another million of these evangelistic booklets. For our international family, we're ready to ship pallets or half pallets directly to you. You just have to make sure your pre-orders are in by April 1st. And deliveries will begin in May. And for our domestic listeners from right here within the good old USA, from cases to full pallets, you can order now at wretched.org/purple while supplies last. So whether you're sharing these evangelistic booklets at your local church, university campus, or any gathering you might come across, remember every booklet you give is a chance to reach someone with the gospel. Head over to wretched.org/purple and let's cover the world in purple together. Again.
Might I, first of all, thank you for the hundreds of wretches who supported Masters Academy International last year. And if you are now perhaps intrigued by what they do at Masters Academy International, would encourage you to check them out. Yes, we're doing a Bible distribution program with them, but they're training pastors around the globe. Seminary-trained students at the Master's Seminary return to their native land. And they get plugged into a Masters Academy International mini seminary outlet where they teach indigenous pastors how to rightly divide the word of truth. It's brilliant. And these indigenous pastors trained at the Masters Seminary train indigenous pastors. Brilliant. It is a wonderful ministry. And you could be supporting a pastor, you could be supporting a seminary overseas, and you'll be strengthening the local church. You can do that at wretched.org/pastor. Wretched.org/pastor.
Hey, hey, thank you so much for listening to Wretched Radio today. We appreciate you when you tune in and listen every day. We appreciate you when you visit our website and purchase our resources. And we appreciate you when you reach into your pocket, pull out your hard-earned money, and donate to this ministry. That means more to us than you realize. As a matter of fact, it means the world to us, quite literally, because you help us reach people all over the world with the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. I mean, it costs way more than pocket lint and warm feelings to produce Wretched Radio and TV, Road Trip to Truth, and Transformed. It takes resources and it takes gospel partners. So for those of you already on board as ongoing monthly gospel partners, thank you. And if you haven't become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, we would love it if you would prayerfully consider doing so. All of the answers to all of the questions we know you have can be found at wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Know your church fathers. Justin Martyr was a second century apologist who was converted after seeing the courage and devotion of Christian martyrs. He earned his surname when he was executed for his faith. When asked to renounce his faith, he responded, "No one in their right mind turns from true belief to false belief." This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's talk about talking? Shut up! You idiot! Loser! Sellout! Wow, this is Wretched Radio. No doubt you've noticed conversations about virtually anything can be rather acrimonious these days, and I'm not talking about social media. I'm talking about inside the church. If anybody disagrees about virtually anything, yikes, the conversations can become so divisive. Neil Shenby, perhaps that name rings a bell, writing an article called Talking About Race in 2024. He was the fellow who probably did, well, there were others, but he did a magnificent job in helping us get CRT, critical race theory, when it was first introduced to public consciousness about 5 years ago. Been going on in academia for decades. But all of a sudden, we're hearing all of these words, the hegemony and the oppression of different people. What is all of this? And Neil Shenby was very helpful, and he was noticing as of late that the ability for anti-woke people, that is not a pejorative, it is simply a descriptor for those of us who are opposed to CRT, you would be considered anti-woke. Now, I suspect these days that term probably has baggage, which is one of our challenges when it comes to even conversing about these subjects. I personally don't think anti-woke is a negative thing. I think it's a perfectly fine descriptor. Maybe there are folks out there who use it in a different way for our purposes. You're just opposed to CRT. And he noticed that this group of people, of whom I am one, are getting increasingly less able, perhaps, to have any sort of sharing of ideas. And he explains the reason for that, that people who are against CRT hear anything that isn't quite right and basically go to a 10. And perhaps you've experienced that. You've been on the receiving end, or perhaps you've been the one who feels that way. Somebody brings up a subject, a political issue, what candidate you're going to vote for, and it just, wait a second. What are you saying with that? And I see it regularly. And Neil Shenby, I think, put his finger on the pulse of it in this article about conversations about race that I believe has a broader application for us, so that you and I can be ones who are actually capable of having a conversation. I know that word is loaded with luggage, but that we can actually engage somebody for a sharing of ideas in an effort to try to persuade somebody of our position. How do we do that when these days it's really hard to say and hear virtually anything? So here's what Neil Shenby did. He noticed about a year ago that he was receiving pushback for his writings on CRT, not from the woke, but the anti-woke. And people were saying, you've changed, that he was now a mushy third way moderate, woke adjacent, or even a secret progressive. Highly unlikely based on all of the work that he has done on this subject. So something has changed, he thought. And I'm sure he was open to, have I changed? Have I compromised in some way? I'm sure he didn't overlook that. But he decided to try an experiment. Here's what he did. He started to post some quotes. So here, for instance, was his first quote that he published, posted on January 1st. Now, you see what you think of it. Here's the quote. How do you respond to this? Quote, racism is a sin rooted in pride and malice, which must be condemned and renounced by all who would honor the image of God in all people. You'd go, what? I think that you would affirm that statement, but was there anything in there that bothered you? Well, it bothered a lot of people. Here are some of the responses. Define racism. Okay. Well, having a haughty attitude about somebody. Well, but that's not how they use racism. So when you say racism is bad, the meaning that progressives have used for racism, that it's only the oppressed who can experience racism from the oppressor, but the oppressed themselves can't be racist because they're oppressed. It's only the oppressor who can be racist. If that's what you mean, you're wrong, pal. In fact, that's what somebody said. Quote, wrong. You might be gaslighting. In group preference is displayed by every single race on Earth. It is always normal, godly, and noble, except when people do it. According to the world system, we're not supposed to be taking our cues from. Here's another one. Universalist twaddle was one of the quotes. This is what makes this response so interesting. You probably don't recognize that quote, but it was from a document written in 2017 by John MacArthur, Vody Bachum, and a number of other theologians. It was the Dallas Statement on Race. And when it was published, people were like, whoa, that's like really aggressive. Now, just what, 7 years later? That's squishy. That's compromised. And the reason people perceive that is because in culture, the word racism, the incorrect definition of it, the unbiblical definition of it, has won the day. And so when you talk about racism today, it means something different than it did 7 years ago. And we need to be mindful of that. Here's another. So then a week later, he quoted this. This is what he posted. I utterly repudiate sinful ethnic partiality in all its forms. Now, you need to know that that came from the Statement on Christian Nationalism and the Gospel. That was written by Christian nationalists. I actually have that document on my desk. Nevertheless, these are not people who are woke. Let's just leave it at that. Here's the responses. Stunning. Brave. Publicly self-congratulating one's righteousness avails nothing for God's kingdom. Luke 18. I don't repudiate ethnic partiality. What in the world? That statement is not wrong. But because the culture has done such a bang-up job of imposing CRT worldview on all of us, we've gotten extremely defensive. And I'm not saying it's wrong. The point is that culture has caused us to respond in such a way because we see the semantic shell game that is being played. And he goes on to say, I've got four reasons why I think that this is happening. And this is worthy of our consideration because, look, we deal with these issues all the time. Whatever the latest church big story is, the breaking story, how are we supposed to respond? What are we supposed to do with? This is now being taught. This is what's happening at an institution. So here's his four reasons. One is CRT itself. That CRT, the word racism, has lost a shared meaning. The new shared meaning is that you've got to be an oppressor in order to be racist. So that's one reason. Racism has won the day. Number two, politics. If you ever, these days, in the political realm, criticize anything on the right, you just joined Marie Antoinette up there on the platform to get your head chopped off. It can't be done. Especially in talking about, well, I can think of one political candidate. You say anything somewhat critical, like it appears that he is promoting an abortion position that is not pro-life. And you say that, and it's like, boom, off with your head. Why spend any time punching to the right? Yeah, racism is bad, but we're not in danger of neo-Nazis becoming a local country commissioner, let alone a senator or the president. The greatest threat is wokeism, so don't you be critical of anything on the right. And we can do that in the church, can't we? We're trying to defend biblical conservatism. And if you ever offer, if you any sort of, hey, well, you know, maybe in this we could take a look out. You're Russell Moore. You're David French. He cites context. A statement like racism must be rejected, might mean one thing from a conservative and something entirely different from a progressive. That's true, isn't it? And then finally, he actually cites, and we just need to be aware that this is an option, now that increasingly there might be people who are becoming racist, honestly. because of what they're feeling, how they're being made to feel, how they're being made to think about themselves. It's actually causing the very thing that CRT is intended to do, to pit us against one another so that we will tear everything down. What do we do with all of that? What do we do with all of that? I think there's two lessons. Number one, how do we hold our conservative principles and still be willing to be critical of ourselves? That ain't easy, and it's harder than ever. Number two, how do we have a communication, a conversation with somebody these days with words ever changing? I think the answer is we don't. We need an outside referee. We need to use the Bible. So if we're going to engage on this subject or any other subject, specifically a theological subject, all the lingo has to go flying out the window, and we need to let the Bible speak. This is Wretched Radio.
Books of the Bible. John, the beloved disciple, author of the Gospel of John and Revelation, also wrote three epistles. In this first epistle of John, the apostle has one main concern, that we may know if we have eternal life and if our faith is genuine faith. If you want to know that you have eternal life, turn to 1 John and see what he has written for you. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Forget global warming. Our temperatures are going up. This is Wretched Radio. We are being told by green people that the oceans are going to start bubbling. Well, let's forget the planet for a moment and let's talk about God's highest order of creation that inhabit the planet and talk about our temperatures, because I don't know about you, but these days it's a lot easier to get agitated about stuff that heretofore probably wouldn't get up your nose, but now it does. Neil Shenvey, writing about this subject of discussing race and that the language change in our society about the meaning of words and the agendas that are so often baked into those words has caused all of us to develop such a sensitivity about anybody saying something in a way that perhaps possibly might be loaded with some sort of negative meaning, that we just get agitated a lot. Have you noticed that? Has your radar gotten set higher? Now, even as I say this, my radar is so high on this stuff. Even as I say it, I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if I'm sounding like a compromiser here. I think that's exactly the point, that we are able to engage on these subjects and respond to one another inside the church. Let the world do what the world is going to do inside of the church in such a way that I don't just automatically raise a Spock eyebrow. What? I think that sounded like a quote from Your Best Life Now. What are you doing in this church? Do you feel that way sometimes? Jimmy, am I the only one that has a sensitivity toward that? I think no. Neil Shenvey is onto something.
Yeah, I think he is too.
And I do believe that the solution to this problem is that you and I stop talking and let the Bible do the speaking. And I'm thinking about Daryl Harrison. I don't know if you recall Daryl, who is no longer a grace to you. I just learned that recently. Decides to go from a parachurch ministry to church ministry. Oh, wait a second. That is the better move. And we should applaud anybody who decides, you know what, I'm going to put all of my energy into a local church. That's just sweet. Because remember, I know perhaps sometimes the opposite impression is given, but the local church is more important than any parachurch ministry. And I mean anyone. I don't care which one you are most fond of. And we're one. We've got great relations with others. We Tomorrow Clubs and the Masters Academy Internet. We're all parachurch. Now, hopefully, we are doing our ministry efforts in support of the local church, which all of these ministries that we're associated with absolutely do. But even so, they're not as important as the authentic entity of the local church. That's God's only, it doesn't mean we can't be doing parachurch. Obviously, I think that. And but the local church is God's only authorized place of spiritual growth. Yep, you can get it elsewhere. That's the place. That's fertilizer center. You want to grow? Get yourself into a local church. Start serving there. I got to tell you, Jimmy, I am so excited about this. I think that this might become one of our things. Churches sometimes will become so obsessed with something, it kind of becomes their thing. And that can sometimes be bad, but sometimes it can actually be helpful so that everybody like hears the message of it. And this is kind of the way we function around here. And I do believe this emphasis is really biblical. I'm thinking of Titus chapter 2. What do we see? Older, younger, that the Bible doesn't have any problem with identifying people of different ages and recognizing that there's different levels of maturity. So here's what you got with the gray hairs. Boatloads of experience, maturity, and wisdom. Here's what you got with the young folks. Empty boats. Now, what do we do about this? Do we put all the empty boats together and let them just bump up against each other going, so how do you think, what are you doing? How does this work? Where are you going to school? What is it like to be married in your home? And instead, we put them together and we let the gray hairs take all of that wisdom and download it, so that the younger people can gain from the wisdom that was so hard earned by the people who probably lived through it. And we're going to be stressing that a lot in our church, so that the gray hairs and the not gray hairs are put together in order to be discipled. And here's the tricky part. I don't think we're going to have any problem with the gray hairs. They're going to be like, wait, what? You actually want me to be involved? You want me to share my, but wait a second. The kids these days, they don't want to hear it. And that, I think, is going to be the challenge. Persuading younger people, start participating in this, whether it's a Bible study, whether it is an in-home sort of study, a young marrieds group, whatever. Let the gray hairs teach you. You'll actually learn. You'll save yourself some pain. You say, well, you're just saying that because you've got gray hair. Well, not much. My beard, I grant you, that's a different story. But the Bible, Proverbs, talks about the wisdom and letting wisdom that has been gained be downloaded to those who just don't have it because they haven't lived as long. If you're 25, you're 25 years old, and you are told, hey, why don't you talk to that 50-year-old? You're probably inclined to go, rather not. I'm doing okay. That 50-year-old has lived as many adult years as you've been alive. They've got to know more, and it's okay. This isn't about better, but we shouldn't blanch it. They're just wiser. Be wise. That's what the Proverbs scream. Be wise. Download it. Son, listen to me. I know stuff. And if we can get and encourage young people to adopt that mindset in our church, I don't think we're going to have any issue recruiting the gray hairs to be willing to download the wisdom and let them speak into their lives. It is in the context of the local church where so much growth happens. And currently in the context of the local church, we're just struggling to communicate. It is not just the world. It is inside of the church. And as Daryl Harrison said to me when I interviewed him for Breaking Bread, do you remember that? We do that series where I'll do meals with really good theologians. And Daryl and I met in Douglasville, Georgia, which didn't make the top 20 cities to live in. Alpharetta was number 9. Douglasville. Real cool little downtown area, train tracks, all of that. We had lunch and we were talking about the critical race theory. And I was asking him the question about how do we do this? How do we actually talk to somebody who is woke? How do you talk to somebody who thinks CRT is maybe good? How do you talk to somebody from the Church of England who is now saying, yes, we're going to give $100 million in reparations because of the slave trade that we were once sort of involved in secondhand centuries ago, which, by the way, was actually rejected. The study group for the Anglican Church said, no, you don't need to invest $100 million to deal with reparations. A billion is what's required. How do you talk to somebody like that? And Daryl said something that made me sit back and go, that's gold. And he was ahead of the curve, I think, for all of us. And he said, just don't do it. You can't have these conversations because words, they're packed with all kinds of dynamite. And what sounds good today could be horrible tomorrow. And that's what Neil Shenvey brought out. And that language has changed our attitudes. He said, we can't, there's no quarter for anyone on anything. Because you and I, are we not used to seeing people slip, slide away? It's like, oh, there it is. Okay. They think this about Sierra. The next thing you know, they're going to be fully woke. And a lot of times that actually happens. So we hear anybody say anything that maybe isn't perfect jot and tittle for us on CRT or anything else for that matter. And we go, oh, there you go. That's compromise. You're on your way to liberal land. I feel that. I think we all do. Politics, when we talk about universities and education, when we talk about theological issues, I feel that. And I think Daryl and Neil Shenvey also mentioned this in his article, are on the right track. Take it outside of yourself. Just remove it from yourself. You can't keep up with progressive dictionary words that are, what? Wait, oh, no, I didn't mean. You just can't keep up. Go to the Bible. Open it up. I'm not kidding. Open it up. If you want to have a conversation with somebody about these subjects, hey, we can sit here and chat, but I'll tell you what, why don't we hear from God? And let's see what he has to say on this subject. And you open it up and you let him play referee. He is the judge. He is the one who dictates terms. And if we're both agreed to submit to that, well, then one of us will be changing by the time we're done because God says so. And a failure to submit to his desires, well, that would be sin. Let the Bible do the talking. If you don't, I fear that we are going to have some unnecessary fracturing. There's going to be more fracturing going on in the church, but some unnecessary fracturing. So let's discipline ourselves, all of us. Let us let God speak so that we don't have to. This is Wretched Radio. Who will speak for those who are staggering to the slaughter? Seems like right now would be a good time to encourage you to support Preborn Ministries. They're in it. It's a little complex out there with the internet and ordering pills. They're in the game. They're working hard to save babies and save mommies and daddies with the gospel. So if you are energized about life, that's something you can do. You can support Preborn. They provide free ultrasounds despite the accusations of all pro-life clinics. They are holistic. They do care about the mommy too. And they care for the family and they provide training. And it is literally a way that if you have the means, you can be saving a life. Amazing ministry. Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
Are you ready to go on an adventure that tackles life's biggest questions head on? Well, we invite you to join John Fabares and Jake Ream on a riveting journey in Road Trip to Truth Season 4. This season, they're hitting the road to explore deep questions about sin, atheism, racism, and the very nature of truth itself. Through candid conversations with university students and wisdom from experts, this season delivers some unwavering answers from a biblical perspective. Whether it's understanding the realities of heaven and hell, navigating the complexities of marriage, or uncovering the truths about money and forgiveness, Road Trip to Truth Season 4 will be your guide. It's perfect for youth groups, families, or anyone who seeks to defend their faith with confidence. Road Trip to Truth has been more than a series. It's a tool for sparking meaningful discussions and inspiring a commitment to the gospel. So if you're ready to head out on a road trip, buckle up for the truth. Road Trip to Truth Season 4, available now at wretched.org/4.
Record number of children are attending the Tomorrow Clubs in Africa. You should see the videos. Hundreds of kids run to meet at a Tomorrow Club in Africa. Why? Because Tomorrow Clubs, they're weekly kids meeting clubs where the kids, yep, they get some treats. But they get the gospel. They get the Bible. They get Bible memorization. Remember, we used to force our kids to do that, but now that we're oppressors, we don't want to be toxic and make our kids memorize Bible verses when it's about a gazillion times easier than when you get old. And they worship the Lord, they pray together, and they get loved on. Tomorrow clubs, I'm telling you, record-breaking. The images are so encouraging, so cool, and I would encourage you to consider being a Tomorrow Club partner. $1 per child per month. Encourage you to please consider supporting the great ministry, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Attributes of God. You can trust in God. Malachi chapter 3 verse 6 tells us that God is immutable. He does not change. He is faithful to fulfill his promises, just as much today as when the Bible was written. You can rest assured that his word is still true. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
You be the judge.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
This is Wretched Radio. Jimmy, you're going to have to play judge because I'm going to make a confession that what I'm about to share bothered me before. And so this ain't nothing new for me, but maybe it is for you. And it is a demonstration that you and I these days are responding to, well, virtually anything in a state of hyper alert. As Western civilization crumbles, and that is exactly what we are witnessing, we should anticipate more and more that you and I are going to feel what's happening in our world and inside of the church. And we might find ourselves not being righteously indignant, but just downright annoyed all the time. There was an article written in the Christian Post. It was an opinion piece by Jerry Newcomb. The headline caught my attention. Do manners matter anymore? And he's identified yet another area of deconstruction in Western civilization. Everything is being torn down. Everything that is good, everything that is wholesome, everything that is natural, gotta go. This is Marxism. This is social Marxism. This is CRT. This is postmodernism. This is deconstructionism. And it's happening everywhere with everything, because anything that we currently see in society as a norm, it came from white people. So therefore, it's automatically racist and it has to go. And that includes manners. And this fellow in this article in the Christian Post points out, we've just lost manners, and he's expressing why he's concerned. And it's a good commentary. It's a good commentary on the importance of manners. He writes, if you remove manners from society, we are left with a crasser and cruder world. It's true. Outward good manners are generally a reflection of inside decency and kindness and reflect the Christian concept of putting others ahead of self. By the way, nice job, Jerry, of invoking the Bible. This is why manners matter. Because when you're eating with your mouth open with food falling onto your lap, you're not loving your neighbor. So who's the authority in this? It's not just me because I'm persnickety about manners, or I've got misophonia and it drives me crazy when you chew like that. The Bible. This is about loving your neighbor. This is why we should be teaching our kids that manners are important. It's being thoughtful. It's loving our neighbor as ourself. He continues, love is not rude. 1 Corinthians 13. Bad manners is being rude. It also applies to the golden rule of Christ, treating others as you would want to be treated. Rudeness and boorish behavior send a signal that anything goes. Yep. Bad manners can signal a breakdown in civilized behavior. Yep. All the while, the test of good manners is to put up with bad ones. So, you've got bad manners if you expect manners, but if you accept anything, well, then you've got good manners. Okay, all right. And I find myself, perhaps more than ever, This is my confession. So, Jimmy, you need to be the arbiter in this to tell me if I'm making too much out of this issue.
All right.
Because it always bugged me before when I would see somebody with bad manners. Now it really bugs me. Why? Because I just know what it represents. You know what else bugs me? Going to the airport in Atlanta, that bugs me anyway. But increasingly, why are people wearing their pajamas and bunny slippers to go on an airplane? Why does that, like, if I would have seen that 20 years ago, it would have been like, hey, look, everybody, they're wearing bunny slippers through the airport. That's bizarre. But now I'm like, why? Because it represents something. It represents a lack of love of neighbor. It lacks decorum. And it's a deconstruction of societal norms. And we are seeing this all the time. It used to be expected that you would dress up to get on an airplane. That was the cultural norm. That's got to go, say the deconstructionists. So what do we see? People wearing their jammies with bunny rabbit slippers on. It represents you are opposed to what kind of keeps us a culture here. That there are some expectations that we have, and it is such a great loss to them. Because they're losing out on norms that are good, that make life feel less independent. I know that's the drive. I've got to be autonomous. I've got to be independent. That's a great loss. Being a part of something bigger than self, oh, that's a gain. And I don't just mean that in the church. I do think that there can be some of that that is a glue that keeps us together when we have some cultural norms, whether it's in our local territory or it's in the nation. That we go to the Olympics and it's like, I want America to win. And that we're all cheering for the same team because I'm a part of this thing. And all of that is being deconstructed. All of it. I'm surprised the Olympics can continue. What is this nation against nation? What is it? Gold, silver, bronze. Everybody gets a gold medal. We'll see how long the Olympics last. We're seeing a deconstruction. And so when it comes to the issue of manners, I see it and I'm like, ugh. And it perhaps bothers me on a different level than it used to. Before it bothered me because it just bothered me. Now I see what it represents. Jimmy, am I making too much of the manners thing here?
I don't think so.
It's all getting torn down. Here's another one that I think is a great loss. I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, or at least in passing, that the trend of young ladies wanting their dad to walk them down the aisle of their wedding, gone. Oh, what is that? It's a loss of a social norm. Now, I realize how progressives would paint that as being patriarchal, but come on, isn't a daughter the apple of dad's eye? Has dad not earned the right to say, this is the one that I've been caring for now for decades. I am passing this one off to you, trusting you. Oh, that's too sexist. Women don't need men. Okay. You can make that argument all you want, but my point is, it's a great loss because we all used to do that. And we all went, okay, it's good to be a part of this. It's good to be a part of this. We're seeing it in Ireland. I don't know if you're tracking the story in Ireland. They want to change their constitution. They want to remove the section that talks about women not having to feel pressure to go into the workplace, that they can be moms at home. That's going to most likely, I'd be surprised if it isn't removed. Because women shouldn't feel like they have to be home with their children. What is that? It's just deconstructing. And by the way, congratulations. Ladies, congratulations. You no longer have to have the oppressive title of mother. Mother. Now, you get the moniker of worker. Congratulations. Instead of contributing to family and society via that structural unit, you're helping us improve our gross domestic product. Justice. Liberation. And deconstruction. It's deconstructing everything. The casting off of cultural norms. Every man is an island. And if I'm not careful, I'm going to let civilization's crumbling make me a really agitated man. Really annoyed. And you know what the problem is with that, besides the sin? I'm not going to be very easy to get along with in church. Because if I've got that, I'm guarding my words because I do understand the temperature of the culture right now. If I'm trying to be biblical and I sense somebody that's not, and I have this mindset that everybody that does not align in every regard to my way of thinking is a danger, what kind of a church is that going to be? So Bible study last night, Philippians 4, a true yoke fellow. It's a, hey, I want, there were two, Iodia and Syntyche were not getting along. These were, they were friends, but they were sisters in the Lord. They weren't getting along. And so Paul says, so I want you, true yoke fellow, but it's very possible, it's the name, it's like Suzuki or something that means true yoke fellow, but it's also a proper name. So he could have been identifying a person. All right, let's just say, Jimmy, do you think that the true yoke fellow was actually his name or just a descriptor of the person that he wanted to moderate the dispute between those two women?
And descriptor?
Really?
You don't?
Come on. It's his name. Who calls somebody a true yoke fellow? Why not give the guy credit where credit is due? Okay. And I don't want to be that, but here's the trick. Not compromising on biblical fidelity. That's the trick. And it is my opinion that the only way that you and I are going to be able to find that balance is if we do it together in the context of the local church. Maybe rejecting less media communication and debate. Working these things out in the context of the local church as you and I both strive to be like the one who found the perfect balance, Jesus Christ himself. And until tomorrow, chew with your mouth closed and go serve your king.